fuse has been lit. We're going through the tunnels and sewers, and we're back for another half episode of an episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I am your co-host, Mike Wan. This is co-host, also Mike.
Also Mike. Yeah, they worked in the lighting of the fuse with those actual credits. I thought that was a great
launching point. Yeah.
It was.
We're doing Mission Impossible Innovative. 4. We're doing all these Mission Impossible half episodes in the lead up to Mission Impossible Fallout coming out at the end of this month in July. And to do that, we are in the fourth installment of what will be probably a seven-part series, six-part series.
Ghost Protocol. Yeah, yes. We'll do a re-rank. Maybe there'll be a shorter episode at the end of it. Seven.
We're doing Mission Impossible 4 today, the probably best critically received Mission Impossible movie up to this point, anyway, certainly.
They loved it, the critics.
Yeah. Okay. We talked glowingly about one. We talked glowingly about three. Two was kind of a step down for us. We'll see how we feel about four, but if we don't like it, we're going to be in the minority. So we'll tease that a little bit. Brad Bird took the helm for this one. He's fresh off The Incredibles 2. We just did a whole episode about that. Gave it the Oscar Sprint Profile
treatment. Yeah, go back. That was
fun. Go back and listen to that. It's definitely going to be nominated for Best Animated Feature. We both kind of landed there. But yeah, he took the helms of this in 2011. He's ready to go with Ethan Hunt and all his cronies and save the world.
Yeah, Brad Bird's first live-action movie. Yeah, after doing The Iron Giant, The Incredibles, and Ratatouille, he does three animated features for big studios. One was not Disney. The other two were Pixar and Disney.
Mission Impossible doesn't get enough credit for being the firsts. First for J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
First live action for Brad Bird.
They're gambling on these guys'
ability. And it's paying off for them.
Tomorrowland and then The Incredibles 2 would follow for Brad Bird. Bird is now set to direct 1906, based on a novel by James D'Alessandro about the fires caused after the record-setting earthquake in California during that year. So that's interesting departure. Writing credits go once again to the TV series creator Bruce Geller, Steven Zalian, and David Koepp. They get characters by credits in this one. I don't remember seeing that before.
No, me either.
Maybe some deal kicked in.
Yeah.
Anyway, the screenplay is attributed to Josh Applebaum and Andre Nemec, writing partners who wrote for Alias. There's the J.J. Abrams connection.
Mm-hmm.
October Road and Life on Mars before this huge project. So these are TV guys diving into movies with this very script.
Sure.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle 1 and 2, the two new installments in that franchise would follow for these guys.
Turtle Power.
Super Shredder. There's a rat mentor character.
The 80s were just like a drug-induced haze. What's that? He-Man? He's quite a skeleton? Green light it.
Yeah, Nemec and Applebaum have G.I. Joe 3 and Beverly Kills Cop 4 on the docket to do in the coming years, in the coming 3 years. Interesting, huh?
Do we need that? All right, yeah, Eddie Murphy's going to be back. Sure, why not?
Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol stars one of the rewritten story by writers on Days of Thunder, the lowly scribe by the name of Tom Cruise.
That was the first time you got me, because I had no idea who you were talking about. But yeah.
He has many writing credits in his IMDb there. That was one of them. You know, he's also done some other stuff, but whatever.
Good for you.
We also have from Somewhere Between and this year's Traffic, Paula Patton as Jane.
How dare.
Well, those are what she's done recently.
How dare Robin Thicke.
Oh, okay. I thought you were getting mad at me.
Mistreat.
You are giving me right now. You're like the Joker looking out of the top of your eyes. I'm very afraid.
God, Paula Patton is gorgeous. Yeah. Gorgeous and a great actress.
How she's not the action movie lead in like 15 movies after this one, I don't get.
I don't know. It's been a while since I've seen Rogue Nation. I don't think she's in that one, though. No, I think this is her lone Mission Impossible appearance.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a dropping of the ball.
Maybe Tom
her
Cruise.
Her or Thandi Newton should have been in all of these.
Maybe Tom Cruise doing all those stunts was too intense and freaked her out the rest of the way.
Turned her
We've
off.
We've seen that happen before. All right, round out the rest of the cast. Cornetto Trilogy star Simon Pegg returns as Benji. Now he's got his license to be in the field, which is kind of cool. He's no longer the guy in
the chair. I passed the field test. Crazy, right?
Love that banter. From The Avengers, The Hurt Locker, and this year's Tag, Jeremy Renner is Brant. He is somehow named after Philip Seymour Hoffman's character of the Big Lebowski. I think it's spelled the same,
couldn't
too.
Couldn't get it out of my head. I know that that's one of your go-tos, and I just, that was the whole movie for me.
Mikael Blomqvist himself, this from the Swedish version of the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series.
Yeah.
And John Wick, he's the main bad guy in John Wick. Michael Nyquist is the villainous Hendrix in this movie.
Yes.
From Spectre and Blue is the Warmest Color, Lea Seydoux is assassin Sabine Moreau.
Another gorgeous woman. The good-looking cast in the Mission Impossible series throughout,
yes,
has just, for both men and women,
level.
It's just
level.
Been jaw-droppingly gorgeous. And you've made the point in episode after episode about how they're too good-looking to be spies.
Yeah.
You may be right. It took four movies, but I might be convinced.
Vladimir Mashkov is Anatoly Sidorov. Anil Kapoor is Brezhnev. Samuel Edelman is Marius Wistrom. I love those three bit performances in this movie.
Same here.
The head of the Russian police, secret police, the head of this huge party in India, and of course the cellmate of Tom Cruise early in this movie, who gets a couple great facial expressions across. And I like the way they do.
You're probably sick of hearing us gush about what the good Mission Impossible has
great
done.
Great ensemble.
Another big thing, casting. They've been right on.
Wow. And of course you have Lost Josh Holloway. That's another word that can't be pluralized.
I just referred to him as Sawyer in my notes.
And Josh Holloway is Hannaway.
Baby, don't hurt me.
Yeah.
Oh, that's Hathaway. Never mind.
I love that joke so much. Great job.
Thank you.
Production notes. J.J. Abrams couldn't direct because of other commitments, but he stayed on to produce. So he was offered this thing first. Couldn't do it. Christopher McQuarrie kind of saves this script. He comes in the middle of production and rewrites a lot of the scenes. His main job was to clarify a very overcomplicated spy game going on here in the fourth movie. So this movie was...
It was more complicated? This is the simplified script?
That is what IMDb...
Man, that guy must have been reading Mandarin at some point in this. God bless him.
Right, so he actually... simplified it from where it was. This film was the first of the series to be shot partially with IMAX cameras. Brad Bird really sunk his teeth into that format.
I saw this in IMAX, actually, in the theater, and the visuals in this are just beautiful.
Yeah. So maybe it's because of the rewrites, but definitely one of the longer shoots, from October 2010 through March of 2011.
Now, to be fair, the script alone was being written for 18 of those months.
Yeah. Mumbai, Prague, Moscow, Vancouver, Bangalore, and Dubai were the settings of this movie. So we're globe hopping in this spy game more than we have before.
I'm glad they went on location for Dubai. I feel like Dubai is one of those cities where you can make it on a soundstage and try to get the reinvention of it, but you could feel the authenticity that was offered in this one.
Absolutely. A city in the middle of a desert. I love the last movie. You had a city in the middle of the Chinese village.
Right.
Very unique outcroppings to actual city itself. I mean, the metropolitan area looks the same. And then you get the unique culture. I like taking a trip.
I'm with you. And they share. It pays off in the cinematography.
Yes, Tom Cruise is actually scaling the Burj Khalifa, which is the world's tallest building in this movie. Now,
I hate him.
He does use secure cables throughout the climb. You got the winds gusting up there. So thank the gods. Michael, how long do you think in the pre-production he is telling people he's going to do it without the cables?
I have no personal attachment to Tom Cruise.
No.
I obviously don't know anyone related to him or his family. The anxiety that I feel watching this stranger
yes.
climb things, knowing he's doing it in real life, even though I know it's safe, at least it made it to film, it scares the shit out of me.
After he scaled the mountain, right, in Mission Impossible 2, without a safety net, without cords for much of it, just basically just him climbing a mountain.
Crazy.
Did you think he was actually up there without harnesses? I did. I'm admitting to you now. I did. I was like, what is he doing? Those things really must be magnetized, those gloves.
It wouldn't have surprised. I would only think no, just because there's no way the, right. that building would go for the liability.
Of course, I'm a dumbass. Industrial Light Magic.
It's the lawyer thinking in it's, you know. Yeah.
Industrial Light Magic digitally erased the cables in post-production.
Takes away a lot of your imagination when you're in law
it's
school.
It's still insane to me that he's crazy. Up there it is climbing the world's
actually, tallest building. And not like crazy, like, oh, it's so cool, it's crazy. Like, it's actually insane.
Movie stars around the rest of the world are just saying, like, ooh, I want this coffee in my trailer. And Tom Cruise is like, ooh, I'm going to scale this building. He's scaling a building, the biggest one in the world. My God.
Man. He's nuts.
They actually constructed the multi-level parking garage, this futuristic kind of parking garage where everything is like roboticized or electricized. I can't think of words right now. Mechanized, because all the cars are parked. It's like the, what do they call those guys who park cars? What do they call it? Valets? Yeah, valets. This is a valet-free parking garage because everything's just like motor mechanized.
They're taking our jobs.
And they construct this thing over a 6-month period for that finale in this film. Michael Giacchino returns to score the film. He scored MI3, so now you got some continuity working series with J.J. Abrams staying on to produce.
I'm just thinking, at what point do they actually tell Tom Cruise no to something? Can I scale this mountain? No. I'm going to do it. Okay. Can I scale this building? No. I'm going to do it. Okay. Hey, can you build me a garage?
They did. They listened to the man. And this time it pays off, Mike, because you got some specs that are pretty eye-popping.
Yeah. Look, the money we talked about has been a kind of a theme throughout the box office of this. One, made its money. It kind of was the introduction. Two, was the high point for the series, made a bunch of money, but it wasn't critically received well as a film, so kind of was a downturn in three. Three was Tom Cruise's personal problems taking the front pages of the tabloids, so maybe it hurt it domestically, but his star power was there worldwide. We'll see what happened in four here. Mission Impossible, mm-hmm. Ghost Protocol. Mike gave you all the specs about the writers and the directors on this film. Brad Bird. Robert Elswit, I just wanted to give him a shout out. He did the cinematography for this.
Yeah.
I thought this was probably the most beautifully shot of all the four.
Awesome.
December 7th, 2011 is when this debuted at the Dubai International Film Festival.
Nice.
Went wide in the U.S. on December 16th, a week or so later in the U.S. Produced by Bad Robot, J.J. Abrams Production Company, and Skydance Productions. So for the first time, a Mission Impossible movie was not produced by Cruise Wagner Productions, so kind of took it away from Tom Cruise in that aspect. But hey, I guess the trade was, we'll let you scale the skyscraper.
Whoops, this one made more money than all the others.
Distributed by Paramount, as all Mission Impossible movies are, a 133-minute runtime on a PG-13 rating. The budget was $145 million, so they took away $5 million from Mission Impossible 3's budget. Mission Impossible 3 came out 5 years prior.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it went down in budget. But the money was back, at least internationally speaking. Box office totaled $694.7 million for worldwide. Still only a $209.4 million domestic gross. Now, it made back its money, obviously, its production budget on the domestic side, but the domestic numbers kept falling. It was the lowest gross opening weekend box office of the franchise by about $15 million.
Wow.
So going all the way back to 1996.
People were really burned by that MI2 in
the States. I guess so. The lowest per theater average gross domestically, as it was the first Mission Impossible movie failing to break the $10,000 per theater average. It only made about 80-something hundred per theater that it was in. So how are these still being made in the U.S. and being released domestically? Well, I think it's because people started giving this movie a second chance. Mm-hmm. The median audience drop-off among the first three Mission Impossible movies from the first to second weekend of release was 52.4%. So that means that of the first three Mission Impossible movies, it lost about half its audience from the opening weekend to second weekend.
Right.
The drop-off between first and second weekend for this Mission Impossible movie, 0.5%.
Oh boy.
So people came back, or gained an audience. It gained steam. The critical audience's reception was also very, very high. This is the highest one that we've reviewed so far. 7.4 IMDb rating on 401,000 reviews, highest for the series thus far. 93% certified fresh Rotten Tomato score on 238 critic scores, 222 of them positive. Average of 7.7 out of 10, both easily the highest in the series thus far. Audience score of 76% on 472,000 reviews, average of 3.9 out of 5. 73 Metascore, highest in the series so far, A- cinema score. So all good news, critically speaking. And Mission Impossible, while maybe the domestic box office is still lagging, it seems to have been back in the good graces.
A lot of high marks for the series there. That's incredible to know. It won 2 Saturn Awards for Best Action Adventure Film and Best Editing. Paul Hirsch, 4 other noms in there. That's a big award show.
Yeah,
Saturn
totally.
Awards, getting more nominations, more wins.
Getting taken more seriously, too, as a franchise.
Michael Giacchino wins that ASCAP Film and Television Music Award again for Top Box Office Film Score. Golden Schmo for Best Action Sequence of the Year, The Climbing Dubai Building. And winner of the Stunt Award for Hardest Hit. This Casey O'Neill, one of the stuntmen, gets hit hard, apparently.
We have to cover the Stunt Awards one year. Because those categories have to be just outstanding. How do you measure hardest hit?
We'll probably have to do a video for that when we finally get on YouTube. That's awesome.
That is awesome.
No, we would love that. More nominees in terms of awards than ever before with this one. 3 Teen Choice noms, 2 Rembrandt Award noms at that festival, 3 Online Film and Television Award noms, 2 MTV Movie Awards nominated, Best Sound Editing nom from the actual Sound Editing Guild, IGN Best Summer Movie Award nom. Tom Cruise is a Kids' Choice Award nominee for Best Butt Kicker. You have Paula Patton as a Kick-Ass for Female Action Star nominee for the Alliance of Film Women Journalists, and 3 Golden Trailer noms. So 30 nominees
in
major award circuits there, more than we've seen thus far in the franchise.
So I think we're learning that the box office is kind of a delay, and this is a point you've made previously, but in total, it's kind of a delayed reaction. So 2 was the high watermark financially, but the effects of 2 were felt in 3 and a little bit in 4. Now that the critic reception was better on 3, 4 gets nominated for more awards and being taken more seriously.
Yeah, if we're kind of weighing the scripts in terms of how clean they are, in terms of conventions and mechanics, 3 was like a little better, I think.
Clearer.
Yeah, clearer.
Less convoluted, yes.
This one's kind of nutty, but I guess we'll start with production values, Mike?
Yeah, let's talk about them. I gushed, sight to sound first, I gushed already ad nauseum about the cinematography. It's beautiful. The sandstorm was shot beautifully. The buildings are shot beautifully. The interiors of the set pieces, unbelievable.
It helps when your movie star will actually go out there and you have IMAX cameras to film him scaling the tallest building in the world. It's just unreal that you get the opportunity. Like, these cinematographers have just got to be over the moon when they go into a Tom Cruise movie like this.
You're totally
right. To actually have their star and not have to deal with all the nonsense of green screen and whatever, just out there in the thick of it. These are the best production values of the franchise thus far, maybe since.
Yeah.
And I'm watching it on my big screen TV at home, but I am just, my eyes are bugging out.
It's a sight to behold. If you aren't in for the convoluted script, there's definitely a payoff as just a fair weather watcher if you appreciate surroundings, if you appreciate the world, the beauty of the world.
The last movie worked the settings in extremely well. This is even to another level.
Yeah.
Because you're globe hopping with this spy game like never before, like I said. You actually have the movie stars in the thick of it, and they're making such great use of the settings.
Yeah.
And they're interweaving the plot with all the elements of those settings. Yes, you get some kookiness involved in terms of the behind the scenes, like Jeremy Renner is somehow in the back of the Starship Enterprise, or parodied on Galaxy Quest, where he's got this goofy behind the scenes duck system with all those fans and whatever.
Yeah,
that was space age.
Yeah, look, but the content,
I like
of
that scene.
It's
weird.
The content of the script is, we're gonna talk about it. We're not kidding. It's out there. It's very, like, a knot. I'm actually shocked that this is reviewed so highly by critics and audiences alike because of the content of it. But, again, if you're just there to appreciate the beauty of the cinematography, you get more than your money's worth.
When your adrenaline is pumping, I'll say it yet again, it's hard to notice the score and the sound editing, even though I'm sure it's good. But I'm like...
The score for me worked. It was more Indian-driven, which makes sense because they're on location in Dubai.
Sure.
And so I thought it set the scene really well. I can't say that. I did notice that about this score.
Playing the Mission Impossible theme in other cultures.
Yes.
Other cultures,
I really like when films do that.
That's really cool.
I'm with you there.
Performances now, Mike. I thought film Twitter and all the critics seemed to throw a lot of egg on Michael Nyquist. So maybe I am overrating him because it's so underrated, or maybe I'm underrating him still because it's been so overrated over the years, or I am losing my mind at this. But I disagree, because in a spy movie that just wants to be popcorn worthy, right? I love the fact that he's just the wrench in every heist. He's just the wrench in every action sequence thrown in and, you know, mucking it up. So I think it's an underrated villain because he convincingly screws things up for Tom Cruise many a times. His performance is fine. All he's got to do is give an evil look.
Yeah, he's a capable antagonist, I agree. The only, not even a bad mark, but how can you compare it, is that watching these in such quick succession, obviously we don't have to wait for the 5 years right. between 3 and 4. Watching 3 and 4 back to back, you're comparing him as the big bad to Philip Seymour Hoffman,
right, who gets one dialogue. No comparison. Right. Yeah, he gets one dialogue scene after another. He's on the level of whatever that Goldfinger guy was from the actual James Bond, right. and having a standoff, yeah, kind of the best ever just, with the hero. This is not that. This guy is just,
yeah,
you know,
he's
throwing,
more action-based. He's
throwing
more,
his weight around exactly. in the action. But I love the actor in a lot of Swedish films. I watched a lot of Swedish films throughout that decade, and he's a big player in that industry. He got one of the most primary roles coming out of Sweden was the Mikael Blomqvist character that be later played by Daniel Craig in the American version, David Fincher version of the Dragon Tattoo, Girl cool. with the Dragon Tattoo. So I'm a big fan of his. Michael, Tom Cruise outdoes himself in this movie. I think he's so good.
Yeah, you liked him as a leading man. Huh? I thought you think he's got a future in this industry.
There's so many stunts. He works so well with the green screen. When they do throw in the special effects of a sandstorm or whatever, I thought him at a party with Paula Patton, him mixing it up with all the with Jeremy Renner, with Tom Wilkinson, him mixing it up with Simon Pegg, goofing around a little bit, being the straight man when Simon Pegg.
Do you think this was too funny sometimes?
This movie was funny. This is the first one of these where they kind of actually execute some jokes.
Yeah, they leaned into it. I suppose it's not fair for me to compare 3 and 4 because they're totally different movies. But in the first 25 minutes, we talked about in last episode, or I talked about at least, how the first 25 minutes, J.J. Abrams took like breaks from conventions and did so much radically different to create suspense. And in these first 20 minutes, you have a lot of one-liners, a lot of Simon Pegg leaning into stuff and being in the field.
Tom Cruise has got a shit-eating grin when he's negotiating with these Russians that he met in prison.
Right.
And then he got the contact.
Even the prison outbreak that happens in the first scene. He's arguing with Simon Pegg via security camera. You know, there's a lot of little laughs in this.
So Mike, if you can come back as one person in our lifetime in some bizarre type of reincarnation, who would it be out of these three? It's almost a see by skip here. The Rock, Derek Jeter, Tom Cruise.
Oh wow.
I'm not putting Tom Brady in here because I'm a Giants fan. I'm not putting Hugh Hefner in here because that'd be gross. Those three. Male fantasy reincarnation.
I would skip all three, come back as Robin Thicke and not cheat on Paula Patton.
Great answer.
You're an idiot. It was The Rock,
The
Jeter.
Rock, Jeter, Cruise.
Rock,
Jeter.
Oh, man.
Oh, that's tough.
How can you
not be Derek Jeter if you're a Yankee
fan? That's what I was going to say, but then I'm a big wrestling fan. So I guess that means I'm killing Cruise? Oh, God.
I'm becoming Tom Cruise, probably.
Are you really? That's a really tough. I guess I would buy tough, I would buy The Rock, see Jeter, and I'd skip Cruise, but I'm not happy about that.
I would put The Rock down there. Skyscraper didn't do well, though, Mike. Not enough people asked, but will he make the jump? What if he doesn't make the jump?
I think we all took that for granted, and I'm ashamed of all of you.
A $45 million budget, poop at the box
office. I'm ashamed of all of you.
Straight poop.
How dare you just assume he'd make that jump, all right? If he would have made it, no problem. They wouldn't have put it in all the previews. Be ashamed of yourself.
I would love it if he just died in this character, died in that movie. And then Nev Campbell has to save it. That would be perfect.
That would be awesome.
That would be a great
I would actually not mind, but I don't think that happens.
WTF are we talking about? Okay, the performances. Jeremy Renner is also taking a lot of heat from film Twitter. I thought he's fine in this movie. I thought he's okay. He's got mixing it up with the action scenes. He's got some heist movie stuff where he's being worked into the mechanics of this.
Yeah,
I thought he's okay. I don't think he's bad.
He doesn't really do a whole lot.
I think that's a criticism from the next movie. That's what I kept hearing. Like, Rogue Nation, I don't think he does anything. This movie, he actually does a lot of stuff.
Yeah, all right. I didn't feel like he was that intricate to the plot.
Multiple fist fights, and he's the main guy doing the thing with Simon Pegg in the back of the Starship Enterprise.
Yeah, he does have the big scene, obviously, when he's in the fan there. But, all right, yeah. I didn't have a problem with him, so that's fine with me.
I don't want to pin the franchise on
right.
the hopes of him being a cool character, but yeah,
right.
which they're trying to do with every franchise, setting him up as the next guy.
A lot of he had his run as Bourne.
I could. All right, so we're kind of mixed. This episode has Simon Pegg doing a lot more.
It does. He's more, and they kind of write that away with dialogue, which I appreciated. Yeah, I'm a full-time agent now. I passed the field test. So I'm okay with it. It's a lot of one. I thought the jokes were a little too much for me at the beginning. I thought it kind of took away from the seriousness that had been laid out for that at that point.
Yeah, because they went dark in the last
right. one. So I kind of wish it was more gritty. But
watching them back-to-back may have been too...
Probably have is had that effect. Issue, yeah.
Okay. But here's what we really want to talk about. Paula Patton as an action movie hero and Lea Seydoux as a cold-blooded assassin.
I wish Seydoux was in this more.
Yeah.
I wish that storyline was dragged out more.
Just make her the bad guy. Yeah, just make her the bad guy. Yeah. Have her throw the wrench in each one of these scenes.
And give her and Paula Patton's big fight scene the end of the movie.
Sure.
Right? I mean,
my favorite scene of the movie, I'm telling you right now, it's my best scene.
The girl
so
fight
that whole
there?
Sequence?
Yeah, it was awesome.
That fight
They're
there.
They're totally capable. They're both gorgeous. They're totally capable ass kickers.
I mean, we're wincing during that fight.
Yeah.
It is so nasty. Ugh.
Yeah, I'm with you. I just wish there was more of it. That's my biggest criticism.
Again, I loved all the bit parts from all the Russian characters of this movie. I just thought the cast, this is like the ensemble where the most actors get to do fun things. And I think a lot of other movies, they're kind of integral to the plot, but here is Brad Bird giving them fun things to do, fun lines to say. You get more fun in this movie
on
purpose.
Which is totally ironic because Ving Rhames doesn't show up until the very last scene.
Which is a great scene.
Yeah, it is.
I love it. Is.
But he doesn't get much to do because he's just there talking to Tom Cruise at the end.
Yes. So, all right, let's talk about Oscar lens there, Mike. I think if stunts could get Oscars, this movie would win a ton. And why? I after watching this movie where Tom Cruise climbs the biggest building, the tallest building in the world, they should rename an Oscar on the biggest night in Hollywood, the Cruise Award. Because...
Actors doing their own stunts.
When somebody does something this amazing in a movie, how is that not honored on the biggest night of movies?
I'm with you. I think it should be, and there probably should be more of an impetus to reward that when actors do take on the risk themselves and choose to do it themselves. I'm sure the stunt community and unions wouldn't like that, but
however, though, I will give a cautionary tale. You just brought something. A lot of these actors. Let's just say they're delusional, many of them, especially the big stars.
Cancel all actors.
How many Vincent Chases out there would be like, wait, yeah, I'm going to do that stunt. And then all their management's like, no.
Could give them a whole new appreciation.
But if they have enough power to get them the pull to actually try it, how many of them actually die during those
stunts? They tried jumping over actual sharks and they miss.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's that risk.
Like Tom Cruise is actually an elite athlete and stuntman. We've proven this by now.
And his insurance policies have to be out of the wazoo.
Yes. Sound editing, I guess. I don't know. Again, my ears are a wind tunnel, but it got a lot of sound editing and sound praise from the critical community, from the Guild this time.
I'm okay with that. I'm not so much with... The script is just too convoluted for Academy recognition as far as if I was the one judging it.
Right.
Cinematography for me is the easiest chance, which actually went to Hugo at the 2012 awards. So I think it's going to bend up there with Hugo.
Hugo was unique because of how it worked in the 3D. I thought the 3D for Hugo was pretty phenomenal. I hated that movie, with a passion.
You know what else was nominated for Best Cinematography in 2012?
What's that?
War Horse!
Oh!
This is more beautiful than War Horse.
Absolutely.
I understand that Stallion is gorgeous.
That's just,
this is more beautiful than War Horse.
That's just Hollywood doing this to Steven Spielberg's backside.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome. All right, visual effects, Michael. I don't know where I'm at with these visual effects because the Kremlin sequence does look CGI at times, and I haven't had that overt shot. Well, the first one I did on the train a little bit because you can't help it. There are people flying on a moving train going at those high speeds with an explosion involved. It looks CGI.
You're talking about the first Mission Impossible
movie? I think there was a moment in the third one that you said you didn't like the visual effects.
Yeah, and that's why I appreciated this one. I had less of a problem with this one because, to me, it was so strikingly out of place in the third one when he's doing the rappel between the rooftops.
Right. That was
I didn't have as big of a problem with this one.
To me, as good as it worked in the trailer, when the building is blowing up and Tom Cruise is running and weaving and then getting hit by the part of the explosion there, that looked fake to me. And it took me out of the movie a little bit for a second there.
But what about the bigger pieces with visual effects, like where he's in the car crash in the sandstorm and that car barely hits him, just misses him?
I thought the sandstorm looked so real to me.
I loved it. I'm with you.
I'm with you. That's one of my favorite, in any other movie, that'd probably be my favorite sequence.
Right. But yeah, I had an appreciation for what the visual effects pulled off here. I didn't really have any problems.
All right, I'm going to make a stand.
Go on.
I don't think I really have to get into the details here because Tom Cruise climbed the biggest building in the world. Why isn't he nominated for Best Actor? Why? When you do that, I mean, other guys are channeling their inner child. That's their accomplishment. This man scales the tallest building in the world. How is that not an accomplishment for an actor in a movie?
Is that acting?
I don't care. It's acting. He's acting like he's scaling the biggest building in the world. He's acting like he's not pooping his pants while he's doing it.
It's an interesting argument. I don't know where I'd fall on it. I think... Well, all right. Let me approach it this way. Hollywood is really... They're bad in the moment. They're not great in the moment as far as the Academy goes and rewarding certain pictures and films. Because do you remember who won the 2012 Best Actor?
No, who's that?
Jean Dujardin for the actor.
He was
the artist.
Really great at playing with a little doggy. But I respect that. Right. I have a
but
new little doggy myself.
But he got it because it was the silent film readaptation, black and white, blah, blah, blah.
And Leo won in The Revenant for being cold for 4 months.
Right.
Hollywood's done this before.
Right. So do you want to argue that he was just as effective doing what he did, putting himself in actual danger like that versus what Jean Dujardin did in The Artist? Yeah, there's certainly an argument to be made.
Just one of the five, man. I'm not asking for blood here.
Jean Dujardin, Demian Bichir for A Better Life, George Clooney, Descendants, Gary Oldman, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy, Brad Pitt for Moneyball. Huh. Those were the five nominees for Best Actor that year. I don't know. I don't know where I fall on. Like I said, I think there's certainly an argument. If you could do like a 17-page dissertation for me and have it on my desk by Monday.
If he's great in this whole movie and he's so versatile, like we said, because he's doing a lot of different things. The shit-eating grin, the comedy. Obviously, he's a stone-cold action force in this movie. And he's also performing his own stunts to this level. Climbing the tallest building in the world. I think that is a feat that we've never seen an actor perform at this level in the movie this big, which is uniquely big in terms of spy movies in the history.
You have not said anything wrong.
The industry of Hollywood.
You're making a good case.
I would make that case that Tom Cruise in this year, as good as he is in this movie, is worthy of a Best Actor nom, and that's one of the first times I think it's plausible. But if, like I said, The Revenant and Leo, like Leo's showier performance was the year before in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Without question.
I thought hands down he should have won that time. And I know I forget who won.
McConaughey won. Great performance. Dallas Buyers Club.
However, I think Leo should have won. Everybody knew Leo was going
to
be back.
I wanted Leo to win, yeah.
Yeah, and everybody was like, all right, now we have to give it to Leo for The Revenant. Not half as good of a performance for Leo in The Revenant.
Reaction, again,
as it is
about that
in
as a
Wall Street.
Was he better than the horse in War Horse, though?
Why am I getting the fire here? You're making the snotty jokes. I should be doing that to you. That's great.
Be brave!
Oh, God.
Anyway.
That movie's awful. I tried to rewatch that movie for like 5 minutes on FX
or
something.
But make fun of Mike Wan when he goes off about horse movies.
I did it because I was like trying to see how quickly it would piss me off. And they're whipping those horses there. It's just, and I just wanted to hurt somebody.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah. That movie pisses me off. It's an angry movie.
Anyway.
So, spoilers ahead, Mike?
Yeah, all right. So, like we do, if you've been with us for all the half-episodes of Mission Impossible episodes thus far, though, again, we're doing a poor job lately of keeping these half-episodes, we're not going to do a full-fledged spoiler dance breakdown. Just know that from this point on, this is your spoiler warning. We're going to go into the twists and turns of this plot, and my lord, are there twists and turns in this plot, or at least a billion plots. So, if you don't want to hear about those, if you want to watch the movie first, it's a good time to pause, come back to us later. But from now on, it's all spoilers all the time. So, go ahead, Mike, talk us through the plot
of this movie is Tom Cruise climbs the tallest building in the world. There are nuclear warheads involved. They stop. No, I'm kidding.
That's about it.
The movie begins with Lea Seydoux killing Josh Holloway from Lost. So add him to the number of great actors immediately killed.
Do a body count. You're right. That was a really poor point that I brought up last episode. How it was
there's another one coming up. Anyway, the real plot of this movie is Lea Seydoux as an assassin kills Josh Holloway from Lost at the beginning of this movie.
Add him to the body count.
That's quite the A-list worth of names there in terms of those who die quickly in Mission Impossibles. Paula Patton is sad. It's her boyfriend. She's also the team leader there for that op. She's out to get vengeance from the very start. Tom Cruise is pretending to be a Russian guy in prison. He breaks out immediately in a really awesome scene.
Sergey?
I don't remember why he has to go to the Kremlin, but during his escape in the van, he says, oh, I guess I got to go to the Kremlin now.
They need to get the intel on Cobalt.
You're going
to
fill in a lot of things for me because I'm on the floor during this entire movie. I watched it twice with my new puppy. She's driving me crazy. I'm playing with her while I'm like getting goo-goo-eyed at the puppy and the screen.
Right.
My big screen. Right underneath my big screen TV.
This was not the movie to be playing with a puppy during.
No, wait till you see the rest of this. So I don't remember why they go to the Kremlin, but it's a fun sequence. Cruise is doing his best impersonation of a Russian general with some cool technology and having fun with Simon Pegg.
Yes.
But boom, there's Mikael Blomqvist, the wrench in every scene.
Yes.
In sequence. He is actually about to blow up the Kremlin. Tom Cruise gets wise to that as him. Now, here's the thing. Tom Cruise barely escapes this explosion.
Correct.
And he scatters with Simon Pegg there. How are we supposed to believe that Simon Pegg got out? Like, Tom Cruise is running. He knows when to run. He knows when not to run. He knows when to, you know, say I'm the general.
It's not
open this
I thought
gate.
Of, but that's a fair criticism.
Open this gate. How did Simon Pegg? I think the more interesting sequence there would be to follow Simon Pegg. Getting the hell away from that. Okay.
He's the bad guy. Simon Pegg, that's going to be revealed in Mission Impossible 7.
One of my favorite sequences of the movie, and there's many, Cruise escapes the hospital and the Russian head of the secret police by stealing a paperclip, gets out of his hospital bed, unlocking the handcuffs there. I love the little touch about the papers go all over the place, over the floor when the nurse tries to pick them up. He gets into a car with Tom Wilkinson after he ziplines his way down into the streets. He got that iconic throwing up the hood of the leather jacket over his head there.
This isn't a good idea. It seemed like it at the time.
I love the stare down between him and the Russian policeman there as he's out the window and they're both looking at the garbage tank.
The truck coming through and trying to figure out how he's going to make it down.
That was terrific.
It was really
I love
well
that they slowed that down. That's just great filmmaking. But he meets with Jeremy Renner and Tom Wilkinson in that car. There's a crazy car crash where Tom Wilkinson gets shot in the head after he immediately has some good lines. Tom Wilkinson, one of the all-timers for character actors that we love.
Throw him on the pile.
He's in that list of A-listers to die very quickly.
Yes.
So, Jeremy Renner and Tom Cruise, of course, they have to find a train car on a train that happens to be leaving right when they need to find it.
Of course.
And they have this goofy, I think it was a very goofy scene where they'd have to just key in to the train car, do the eye scan while not running into one post after another.
Yeah.
That gimmick was...
The train car was so secure, and then still Simon Pegg and Paula Patton have them at gunpoint because they think somebody might be breaking in.
Right.
After all those security protocols?
That was any, you know, bit character in War Horse actually kicking a dead horse. That
hey,
joke
it's a nitpick.
Didn't work.
It has nothing to do with the plot, so.
Right. So I don't know why they have to go to Dubai and climb the tallest building. I know they watched some footage of Mikael Nyquist
because there. Because they get word that the...
There's a deal.
There's a deal going down between Moreau's character and Hendrix involving Russian nuclear codes. Hendrix is trying to buy the nuclear codes that Moreau has in her possession. The deal was going to go down in Dubai.
Bad guys are uniting in Dubai. I'm playing with the dog. I come to when Tom Cruise is actually climbing the tallest building in the world, and his magnetic gloves are malfunctioning. This is so cool. I love this so much. Simon Pegg should be fired on the spot that all of his great tech in this movie
fails.
Number one, he doesn't know how to use the tech, so he already demonstrated that in the field he almost gets Tom Cruise killed because his goofy ass face is in front of the camera, which is so funny.
Yes.
I thought, and then Tom Cruise is like, and they can't talk about it. And then now his tech actually fails. And how does Ethan Hunt say, you're off my team forever?
Well, I do appreciate that Brad Bird kind of right off the bat said that tech's going to be a problem with this because this message will self-destruct in 5 seconds.
Right.
Even that doesn't go well until Tom Cruise goes back to hit the phone. So he actually needs to destruct it himself. So that's kind of a tip-off that tech's going to be a problem. And tech should be a problem because I don't care what kind of secret agent you are. All of us have issues with technology.
It works so well for the suspense of this movie that all their cool gadgets are giving them more issues than help.
Right, and it's about time.
Love it. Love it, love it, love it. So Tom Cruise scales the building to get from one room to the next. I don't care. But it's just awesome how he does it. Then he has to dive and jump. He's on cables, but we don't know that at the time. My gullible ass is thinking he's really doing it. For the record, I love how they build that sequence into the fight between Patton and Seydou. I thought that was really cool. Yeah. You got the Simon Pegg goofy-ass three-handed costume where he's like the bellhop giving them tea. You have the cool switch with the diamonds during that. Then you have that awesome fight between Patton, who's out for blood, and she gets it. That's my favorite part. She gets it. She gets blood.
Vengeance fulfilled.
She beats the shit out of Seydou. Then she kicks her outside of the building.
Seydou. And it was necessary. It wasn't like a being selfish killing her. Yeah.
Yes. I love that. I love that part of the body count. You add a third sequence to this where Tom Cruise is chasing down what he thought to be just one of the arms dealers with the nuclear codes is actually Michael Nyquist.
Yes.
He rips off part of his
Hendrix
mask.
Hendrix himself. That was beautiful.
That was awesome. And then that car chase through the sandstorm. Why? Number one, why doesn't traffic stop in Dubai when there's a giant
sandstorm? I had that
question
as well. I don't understand how you could see.
They keep going. All the highway's still moving. They're just another day. They just put on their whatever sand, see through the sandstorm glasses that they all own out there.
Too. Why is there so many convertibles in a place where there's sandstorms?
Right. That engulfed the entire city in one ginormous cloud, which is pretty... Still, it's so awesome. It looks so real. And then you have the tracker stuff, which is like a video game, just tracking the other car with Nyquist in it, Hendrix in it, Tom Cruise hitting him full force, but Nyquist is always a step ahead. Mm-hmm. He wasn't in the car. Tom Cruise then has to run. So the whole, I love how the whole thing devolves into Tom Cruise chasing Nyquist on the back of a truck.
Yeah.
On the back of a truck.
Yep.
And he's just sitting there, you know, with his mask
rips
torn
his mask
off.
Throw it on Hendrix the whole time. Yes. Very appropriate.
I love that whole sequence. My favorite of the movie. Worth the price of admission there. So now we get all the guys arguing. Jeremy Renner, Paula Patton, the whole team is coming apart at the seams, arguing about the whole thing. Jeremy Renner reveals that he is a ex-field agent who stopped being a field agent and became an analyst after he botches the whole protection detail of Michelle Monaghan's character from the third one.
I thought that was a cute way to tie in continuity.
Right.
And explain away Michelle Monaghan not being part of the cast.
I did. I like that. So anyway, there's a big standoff, which Tom Cruise acts the shit out of, by the way. I thought he's great in that scene.
You're high on him in this movie.
I'm high on his acting chops in this movie.
I liked him. I thought he was great as always, but yeah, all right.
So I forget, and I kind of play with the dog again. I don't know why they go to the, you know, the Sheik's
motivation
cool
is a
party.
Problem for you in this.
It's the coolest party. Anyway, Paula Patton in that dress.
Well, yeah, all right, easy.
Mike, it doesn't matter. Paula Patton's wearing that dress.
Yeah. Paula Patton is gorgeous. Tom Cruise is gorgeous. Jeremy Renner is gorgeous. Yes. They go to the Sheik's party because Hendrix has a satellite, has access to a satellite and Russian nuclear codes. Mm-hmm. So the only way to stop them is to get to the Sheik who has the codes to disable the satellite. Mm-hmm.
They play the Mission Impossible theme in another with other instruments, which is awesome.
You know, like sitars and stuff.
Okay, so basically, again, for some reason, Simon Pegg and Jeremy Renner are in the spaceship while... Paula Patton has to seduce the Sheik guy after Tom Cruise gets to kiss Paula Patton. I'm playing a hunch here.
That's how me and Mike first started kissing.
Just the greatest thing in the world.
Told each other we were playing hunches.
All I noticed is her looking at him like that, and I would kill for anybody to look at me like that.
I hate Robin Thicke.
Oh my God.
To cause pain to an animal that beautiful. to a creature that beautiful.
Again, I don't know how Paula Patton isn't the lead in every action movie after this, because she really, is every male fantasy.
Exactly. Well, her beauty aside, like, why wouldn't you give her, and we said it already, but give her the big ending?
Right.
And she kind of has it with the way she interacts with the Sheik, and that's fine. But give her that big fight scene at the end to wrap up this movie.
I do think it's well coordinated how the entire team has to help Tom Cruise basically defuse this nuclear bomb in midair.
Well, that's the
bomb
theme of the movie,
mid-air.
Right? Yeah. Oh, we're a team. We have to work on teamwork, et cetera, et cetera.
So basically, they're all fighting bad guys after they do the heist thing in the spaceship. They're all fighting various bad guys.
You know there's not actually a spaceship in this movie, right?
Don't know what's happening. There's the parking garage, the futuristic parking garage where Tom Cruise has to fight. He finally gets caught up with Nyquist there, Hendrix. They have to fight. I love that. My favorite bad guy thing in the movie is Nyquist is like, gets a hold of the
this
suitcase
was awesome.
With the
yeah.
nuclear codes after they're just having this awesome, wild, wacky fight with all the cars getting on those
robotic lifts.
Robotic yeah. lifts, thank you. Up and down, and it's this wild thing. Tom Cruise hurts his leg so bad. And yet, Nyquist gets hold of the suitcase and is like, to secure it away from Tom Cruise, he literally falls backwards off of the top rung of this garage, down to his death on the ground where he's dying slow.
Bounces off a car and then bounces even six stories further down to the concrete.
Thinks he's gotten it out of reach of the super agent Tom Cruise. Tom Cruise is like, no, I get in a BMW. I'm going to do it the old-fashioned American way and show you how to park a car, my friend. No.
Takes a BMW and nosedives
to
the bottom of the garage. Airbags obviously save him. He gets there just in time.
Puts a seatbelt on.
Thank God. Gets there just in time, stops the nuclear launch.
How he wouldn't get...
Or stops the missile
yes,
anyway.
And of course, his team members have to do last minute's heroics of their own to get there. Simon Pegg gets a gun in his hand for the first time
yeah.
in a while.
Kill someone.
Jeremy Renner is beating the shit out of guys there too, and it's quite the sequence. Now, my favorite epilogue of the entire series because, oh, by the way, Michelle Monaghan is alive.
Da, da, da.
Ghost Protocol was in effect for her as well. And yay, Ving Rhames is back. Ving Rhames shows up. Where you been, Ving? How cool is your first name? Let's have a beer. And he's like, oh, I'll see you in the next movie.
Yeah.
Basically, I'll see you.
Essentially. So, yes, they all decide, have a decision to make of whether they want to keep following Tom Cruise as a team. They all decide yes. Jeremy Renner says no at first, but Tom Cruise explains to him that you're the only person that knows that my wife is still alive. And then we see Julia walking in the
yeah,
distance.
They probably should have, you know, gotten the contracts for the next movie already signed by all those
right,
other actors.
Right, right.
Because they kind of had to mix it up for the next one. But
they knew Ving Rhames would be there.
My God. So, yeah, that's the plot.
Right. And it is convoluted. Look, for as convoluted as this plot is, and there's like three separate plots in this movie.
Right.
Like we have to go to Dubai. We have to get the meeting in Dubai. There's two meetings that they have to run at different times at the same time because they need to talk to both Moreau and Hendrix, but they need information from each of them to go. It's very convoluted.
And this is after clarity expert extraordinaire Christopher McQuarrie jumps in.
Right, right. And it's a credit, I think, to Brad Bird that this plot in this movie was as relatively seamless as it was.
Yeah.
Because you could have gotten lost in this easier with a lesser director. I think that's...
I got lost of this with a puppy on the floor.
Exactly. I mean, and that's... I know it's half in jest, but it's true. There was a lot to digest in this movie.
Right. I didn't even try. I have no regrets. I have no regrets because I still enjoyed this movie to the end of it, very end of it.
So I guess let's stick with worst scenes for a second. That could have been a problem. I think it's actually a credit, even though it's kind of a quote-unquote worst for me, in that there was too much almost in this movie. My worst scene overall... At some point, enough has to go wrong where they fail the mission.
True. Okay. Well, they kind of fail. Oh, fail at the end.
The missile's been launched.
Yeah.
Okay.
But they do fit. The Kremlin is a fail. That's the fail of this movie. There's always a fail at the beginning of the movie.
The U.S. should have been nuked in this movie.
Oh, and he fails at the sandstorm, too.
The missile's been
away.
Launched. Ethan decides on the fly there has to be a way to disarm the warhead, even though it's in mid-flight, and even though Wishroom was tearing apart all sorts of wires, and Benji had to reconnect all of them at all the right places, and even though Jane is hit with a bullet, she can cover Benji while he does this, and even though the power is shut off, Brant can put it back on in time, and even though that all puts a damper on Benji's abilities to stop the bomb, he'll have enough wherewithal to stop a nuclear bomb, something he's probably never done before, nor had training for, considering he just passed the field test. And even though Tom Cruise has to go on a suicide dive to chase a man that just killed himself because he honestly just wants it more than Tom Cruise. It's all okay.
No, you know what? This is a fascinating thing to talk about here, because other major properties, other major universes have gone tragic with big endings of their showcase films. I'm not going to mention them here, but big TV properties.
Yes.
On HBO, big properties that we've reviewed before have gone negative. They've been tragic arcs necessarily. If a mission was truly impossible in this series and they failed at the end of it, what would that do for the next film? What would that do to the continuity? I wonder, in a series like this that's so episodic, as good as they are, they're so episodic, do you need that tie-in from one movie to the other? Are people going into this series buying a ticket to the next Mission Impossible film to basically make a commitment 2 to 3 films in advance? Now, I know you're talking about the preposterous nature of this particular impossible mission.
Yes.
But it's that just sparked it for me. I thought
fascinating. It is a good point, and it certainly would be a deviation from the norm to have a Mission Impossible that actually ends with a failure.
Fall out end with a failure is what I guess what I'm asking at the end of the day. I think it would help, wouldn't it?
I mean, it would set up more questions than answers.
It's a bit trendy right now with the tent poles.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point. I was just complaining to be a dick. I did. That was my quote unquote worst. What was your worst scene of this?
There's a lot of nonsense in this movie mixed in. Yeah. And I know we said things about the plot. I neglected to follow the plot. I just totally gave up. And my worst scene is therefore
I refuse to watch this movie.
my worst scene is therefore my pug puppy is getting a little bitey and she's doing that bitey phase. And I had to pause the movie like 10 times to get her ass outside and tie her little ass out by doing sprints. We do sprints in the backyard. And that, if you have a puppy that's, you know, relatively low energy like a pug is, I'm glad I don't have a, you know, German Shepherd puppy, because then I'd be lost. But I am able to jog while she sprints, and she's happy. She gets to run around, and I get to tire her ass out so I can watch the rest of the movie.
Good job, Mike.
We're going a little long on these episodes, and I don't help matters. So those are my best. That's my worst scene. I don't have to say my best scene because I've already said it a thousand times.
Cinematography for me was best scene. The use of the technology, the hallway scene with that.
I like the technology. Yes,
I like the way Brad Bird was able to tell off the two meetings happening simultaneously.
More innovative with the technology, and that was stepped up from the last movie, but we kind of two plays along one, right? And it does it worse. And working in the setting of two, it's like, all right, I'm doing it for style with the Doves. That's how I'm going to work my setting.
Smoke, fire, and birds. Yeah.
Yeah. This movie really incorporates the setting even better than the third, obviously, because you're dealing with the elements. I just love the tech going wrong. Yeah. I love the glove malfunctioning. I love the Simon Pegg goofing off with it, even though he should be fired and probably eliminated. He should be terminated based on his dealings with this.
Tom Cruise just turns the gun on him.
Yeah, he fails to the point. Oh, most times. And after all of the reassurance he gives Jeremy Renner in the spaceship, that still fails. And Jeremy Renner still has to, you know, kick and do all this innovative stuff, kicking through that wind silo spaceship area there just to get himself to safety. He's burning up in the oven. It's unbelievable.
So there you go. Simon Pegg needs to be killed in the next movie. If he's not done in Fallout, Mike's going to be upset.
So final thoughts, Mike. Tom Cruise climbed the tallest building in the world.
Yeah, I heard that from somewhere.
For my viewing pleasure. Life is good. Movies are awesome. Look at the time we live in. Yeah. He is a movie star doing above and beyond what movie stars are required to do for us.
Certainly on the upswing for this franchise, and overall, 3 out of 4 movies are really enjoyable so far. Yeah. And we're going to have 5 coming soon, and then we'll follow it up with Fallout. But let us know what you thought about Mission Impossible 4 or any of the Mission Impossible half-episodes, or I guess not quite half-episodes. We're going to label them half-episodes.
Maybe just sods. I don't know what we do with their sods. These are big, sizable sods.
But you can reach out to us, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MM, and Oscar on Twitter, MikeMikeAndOscar.com@gmail.com, on iTunes, Stitcher, everywhere. Type in Mike, and Oscar, and you will see us. And if you can leave us a review on iTunes, tell us about your pug stories too.
they really help us grow the show organically on iTunes there. It just populates us more often. So we really appreciate that. We appreciate all the other podcasts who are listening to us and spreading the word about our show as we spread the word about your show. That's really helpful, the cross-marketing there that we're doing. So thank you guys, and thank you for listening once again.
Yeah, been a ton of fun. Any last words of wisdom here, Michael?
Tom Cruise is the man.
Reality sucks, guys. Keep watching movies and figuring out these impossible missions with us, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.